Chapter 11. Return to King Street Christian Center. The last rays of sunlight dipped below the horizon as Violet climbed into her car, about to leave the fire station. Out of uniform now and wearing her street clothes, tomorrow's trip to Houston was swirling in her mind. Before pulling out of the firehouse parking lot, she tapped on her phone, finally returning Davy's call. Davy quickly answered, saying with relief in his voice, "Hi Violet, I'm glad you called me back." "Hi Davy, what's going on?" she gently asked. Davy took a deep breath, then said, "First, I wanted to thank you again for meeting with Mary and me last night at the church." Then he added, "That hug from Dad, it meant more than words can say. I know fulfilling his last wish couldn't have been easy for you, and I truly appreciate you doing that for us." Violet felt pleased and proud, saying, "I'm happy to help you and your family in any way I can. I feel like we are all in this together." Davy replied, softly explaining his feelings in more detail. Knowing Dad was thinking of us that night means something special. For him to be so determined to reach out to us in some way makes sense. That's the kind of person he was, Davy continued with his voice strengthening. "Today, I feel a little stronger, a little better equipped to deal with all this. Violet, you really made a difference."
"That's good to hear," Violet softly said. "I think that's what your father intended. Maybe, somehow, he knew that a small inspirational connection would help you and your whole family move forward." A thoughtful silent consensus fell between them. Davy had more on his mind, and his voice grew hesitant. "There's something else," he said. "This morning, my sister Jennifer arrived home from Germany. Mary and I told Mom and Jennifer about our meeting with you last night." After another short pause, he continued, "Well, Jennifer is eager to meet you also. Is there any chance we could gather at the church again tonight?" Violet had to give it some thought, because going to the church tonight might interfere with her travel plans. The Houston trip loomed tomorrow, demanding preparation and a decent night's sleep. But she would be gone for a few days, and away from Dave's family. She didn't want to miss the chance to meet Jennifer, and perhaps even Julie. Violet felt that it was an opportunity, one that she couldn't easily pass up. Taking a deep breath, Violet made her decision. "Yes," she said with a firm voice. "I can be there in 45 minutes. Ending the call, Violet sat back in her car for a moment, once again, a mix of excitement and apprehension swirling within her. The detour this evening would mean a later than expected night. Also, tomorrow morning, her schedule would be tighter, but the chance to offer support to this grieving family was an attraction she couldn't resist. Far to the east of San Antonio, the Texas sun had already set, and darkness ruled. A lone white cargo van, a rental by its utilitarian appearance, hummed along Interstate 10, moving east with light traffic toward Houston. Every few miles, the monotony of endless fields was broken by a commercial strip, a gas station oasis, or a cluster of fast food restaurants, beckoning weary travelers. A brightly lit information sign loomed ahead, its pronounced white letters against a green background announcing, "Houston 31 miles." Not long after, the van's driver flicked on the turn signal, then exited off the interstate onto a two-lane crossroad. The only sign of civilization, a convenience store with a bank of gas pumps out front. As the pavement stretched north through the lonely expanse, the headlights of the van carved a path through the darkness. A sense of isolation settled over the scenery. Finally, a silhouette lit by starlight emerged. A lone, unassuming metal warehouse materialized in the distance. Its exterior was weathered and dented, a testament to years of service. Out front was a single dimly lit parking lot, occupied by a handful of vehicles that sat parked. A chain-link fence secured a gated paved yard along one side of the building. With the rattling of the chain-link fencing, as if by an invisible hand, the gate rolled open as the van approached. The van slowly glided past the open gate and into the fenced area. At the same time, one of the massive overhead doors of the warehouse rumbled open, with the inside being well lit. Then a man exited, signaling with his hand, beckoning the van to come inside. Once the cargo van was completely inside, the door rumbled closed again. Now, inside the building, the van door creaked open, and the driver emerged. He exchanged greetings with a man that had been waiting for his arrival, both sharing dark hair and complexions that hinted at Middle Eastern descent. "I have the goods," said the driver. They admired the van with unspoken respect, as if it held some precious treasure. Suddenly, the office door burst open and slammed against the wall. A figure emerged, striding with a forceful purpose. It was Carlos Mendoza. Apparently, his westward trek was a ruse. Ditching his car hundreds of miles west of San Antonio seemed to be a deliberate attempt to shake pursuit. He wasn't alone. Following close behind was a well-dressed young East Asian man, the same man that obtained a printed copy of a set of drawings earlier that day, with the same cylindrical case clutched in his hand. "Show me," Carlos yelled, rudely commanding his subordinates, his voice tight with urgency. He gestured towards the back of the van. With a sharp flick of his hand, he commanded, "Open it." The driver scrambled to obey, fumbling with the locks before throwing the doors wide. A wave of his hand offered a silent invitation. "Here you go," said the driver. The van's interior was near full with a jumble of cardboard boxes and a few small wooden crates. Stenciled lettering on some boxes left no room for interpretation. "Ammo." Carlos barked another order. "Unload it. Group like items together in stacks. I need an accurate inventory." The two men, their fear of Carlos evident, jumped to obey. They unloaded the van with hurried efficiency, while Carlos and the Asian man observed. Carlos occasionally barked out instructions and kept a running count on the inventory. The contents of the van became terrifyingly clear as the unloaded boxes were grouped by their contents. Graphic illustrations on the cardboard proclaimed their deadly cargo: assault rifles, pistols, mountains of ammunition, and enough military tactical body armor to transform a sizable team of men into a walking indestructible arsenal. Another stack overflowed with gun modifications, scopes, sights, and a sea of additional gun magazines. It was definitely clear Carlos had significant resources available to him, resources from within America. Only the wooden crates remained a mystery. Sealed tight with screws and devoid of markings, they held an unknown threat. Carlos grabbed a cordless drill from a nearby table. His face hinted a dangerous mix of anticipation and paranoia. He thrust the tool into the hands of one of the workers. "Open it," he yelled, his voice leaving no room for argument. The man, visibly tense under Carlos's scrutiny, and fearful as to what might be inside, approached the crate with trepidation. The worker hesitated, eyeing the crate with a tremor of fear. Carlos and the Asian man retreated, maintaining a safe distance as the man began his task. Half a dozen screws held the lid shut, and one by one, he methodically removed them. As if they feared a booby trap, each removed screw echoed in the tense silence, like a countdown. Finally, with a deep breath, he lifted the lid, revealing the crate's contents. His eyebrows shot up, with a look something akin to satisfaction crossing his face. He gestured towards the crate, his eyes locked on Carlos, saying, "Come see." Carlos shoved past him with a rude, "Move back." He reached into the crate with a predatory, crazed look in his eyes, and a sinister grin, then withdrew a hand grenade. He brandished the weapon towards the Asian man, a triumphant smirk twisting his lips. "We have the power," he declared, his voice laced with a maniac's energy. Carlos raised the grenade symbolically over his head, while clutched tightly in his hand. It became a twisted symbol of their deadly arsenal, and they had dozens of these explosive anti-personnel weapons. The van had transported a chilling arsenal, weaponry that could transform at least 10 men into a heavily armed unit. Carlos had the capability of creating a miniature unstoppable force, with the ability of inflicting devastating damage, especially to innocent civilians. With this kind of weaponry in the hands of someone like Carlos, this guaranteed that something immensely sinister was about to happen. Carlos walked over to a large shipping table and asked the Asian man to roll out the drawings onto the table. The young Asian man opened the tube-shaped container that he had been carrying, then pulled out a set of architectural drawings for a large building. A closer look at the plan set revealed that this was the design plans for the mega church, Calvary Christian Center of Houston, the same church that Sam and Violet had been assigned to on New Year's Day. The Asian man, his finger gliding across the plans, seemed to somehow possess an intimate knowledge of the layout. Carlos just listened and concentrated, and absorbed every detail provided by the Asian man, with few questions. This intel lesson on the Calvary Christian Center went on into the night. On the highway north of San Antonio, the headlights of Violet's car sliced through the night, lighting up each mile marker, bringing her closer to Davy's church, and Jennifer, the woman she thought might be more like herself. Like the night before, her anxiety was building as she got closer. Violet knew, Jennifer is in the Air Force, just like she had been, stationed at the same German airbase, no less. It was at this base where Violet received the news that shattered her world. John, the love of her life, killed in Afghanistan. Jennifer's grief and circumstances may likely mirror Violet's own life-shattering experience, uncomfortably close, perhaps too close. Just traveling in her car, already, the faces, the words, the crushing vulnerability and details of her own horrific experience were all threatening to come flooding back. Violet worried that she might have difficulty maintaining her own composure. Understanding that Jennifer, unlike Mary, had been alone and without family support for days, ever since hearing that her father had died. Violet was concerned that Jennifer's state of mind might be quite different than Mary's. In contrast, Mary had the immediate support of being surrounded by family and friends. Violet understood, with a chilling clarity, how differently grief manifests in solitude. Jennifer's grief would likely be more raw, a close reflection of Violet's own wounds, something Violet feared might be more than she could handle. Tonight's time spent with Jennifer would likely be a test as to how well Violet has healed. As Violet pulled into the parking lot, everything looked pretty much the same as the night before. There was a church event of some sort underway, with numerous cars in the parking lot. As Violet got out of her car, she said to herself, "Here we go again." Not sure how things would play out, she was determined and as ready as she could be to navigate this uncharted territory. The soft glow of the pavilion beckoned Violet forward. She recognized Davy sitting on the curved bench in the pavilion, his kind face showing signs of worry. However, the others that came with him were strangers, and numbered more than she had expected. There was a calm silence in the night air, broken only by the distant murmur of conversation from inside the church. No smiles graced these unfamiliar faces, only a deep well of sadness and stress. The sight of Violet was a distressing reminder of the grief they were all engulfed in. As Violet entered the pavilion, Davy rose to greet her. A small smile played on his lips, tinged with a hint of worry. "Violet, thank you for coming." His voice was warm, but with a touch of subtle tension. Gesturing with his hand, he began introductions. "This is..." He paused for a beat, then continued. "Jennifer, my sister." "Hi Jennifer, I'm Violet." Violet reached out for a handshake, but Jennifer was hesitant and slow to reach out with her hand. Violet continued, "I hear you are in the Air Force, stationed at Ramstein Air Base in Germany." While shaking hands, Jennifer softly answered, "Yes, I am." Davy continued, "This is my daughter, Lily, she's 13 years old." Violet shook Lily's hand, saying, "Hi Lily, nice to meet you." Lily just nodded. Davy continued with an uncertain look on his face, "And this is my mom, Julie." Violet could see that Julie was very stressed, even trembling. She was having a hard time making eye contact with Violet. Violet hesitated for a moment, then began to reach out with her hand. Julie quickly turned her head away, got up, and then began to leave the pavilion. Davy moved to his mother's side, "Are you okay, Mom?" Julie answered softly, "I'm just going to walk around the courtyard." Then she continued on her way. Davy turned to Violet and spoke discreetly, "My mom is having a really hard time." Violet acknowledged, "It's okay, I understand." Violet looked over at Jennifer, and then went and sat down beside her. Prepared to divulge something she had left out from the night before, Violet began, saying, "Jennifer, I have to tell you something about me." Looking over at Davy, she added, "Davy, you should hear this too." Violet took a moment to wipe tears from her eyes, and then she tenderly touched her wedding band. Davy and Jennifer glanced at each other, wondering what was about to come. Lily was watching everything. Violet looked back into Jennifer's eyes, then continued, "Jennifer, in more ways than you know, I'm a lot like you. A few years ago I was also in the Air Force, and stationed at Ramstein. I have no children, but I was very happily married." Violet closed her eyes and took a deep breath. "My husband John was also in the Air Force, and was stationed in Afghanistan. We would see each other online when we could, and John and I were looking forward to our next assignments so that we could be stationed together again. Jennifer could see where this conversation was going, and it didn't sound good. She reached out and placed her hand on Violet's hand. Violet continued, "Then one evening, I came home from work to my apartment, and I wasn't home long, before a general with a military chaplain showed up at my door." Jennifer was about to burst, with tears streaming down her face. She cried out, me too, it happened to me the same way." Violet gripped onto Jennifer's hand with her other hand. Violet continued, with tears rolling down her cheeks, "They told me my John was killed by a suicide bomber." Then speaking softly she said, "Just like your dad." By now Lily was crying also, so Davy slid closer to her, and held her. Unable to contain herself, Jennifer cried out, "I felt so alone in the world, so far from home." She also recognized how Violet must have felt losing her husband. Unfortunately, they did have a lot in common. Violet continued, "Your dad, somehow, he said to me that he sensed he was dying, and he was desperate to reach out to you, and your whole family one more time. In this moment, you and your family were the only thing on his mind. He hugged me, and he made me promise that I would carry his last hug to his family, and then he was gone." Violet paused, looking down with sadness. A heavy silence descended upon the pavilion, punctuated only by the distant strains of music from within the church. Finally, Violet looked back up and met Jennifer's gaze, her own eyes brimming with unshed tears. "This last hug of his was very important to him. That's why I'm here tonight. I'm here because your father asked me to be here, to give you his last hug." Violet compassionately extended her eyes and arms, inviting a hug from Jennifer. But Jennifer hesitated, her mind racing. She wanted this hug more than anything in the world. But once she received this hug, what could be next? Would her dad be over? Would a sense of finality wash over her, forcing her to confront the terrifying prospect of moving on without him? Would this embrace be the final goodbye? But her heart was saying she had to have this hug no matter what. She could not walk away from it. With a nod, Jennifer slowly reached out to Violet, pouting with her lips quivering, and tears rolling down her cheeks. In Jennifer's mind, she tried to imagine her father reaching out to her, reaching out from thousands of miles away. For 2 days, Jennifer suffered without the support of her family, so sad that she was numb. She couldn't think or function without the counselor that traveled with her. The counselor became her lifeline. She was so helpless, it would have been impossible for her to make it home on her own. Then just this morning, when she arrived home to her mother's house, with the support of her family, she began to come back to life. Lily watched closely, wiping away her own tears as they embraced. Violet whispered softly, "Be the Max." Jennifer's eyes opened wide, soothed with the warm love and words sent by her father, as if he was reaching out one last time to comfort her. This touch was somehow much more powerful than she had expected. Her father's special words seemed to extend a lifeline to Jennifer, and she passionately cried out, "Oh, Daddy, I miss you so much. How do I live without you? I love you so very much." Jennifer openly cried, which lasted for some time. Then when she seemed cried out, she softly spoke again, "Thank you, Daddy, for being there for me all those years." Somehow, she had made an unexplainable connection with her father. This one last hug was so incredibly special. It was much more than she had anticipated, way more soothing than a simple touch from a stranger. As Jennifer and Violet separated from their embrace, they continued to hold hands, a promise filled between them. Violet spoke, attempting to share some of her wisdom. "Know that he will always live within you. He is, and always will be, a part of who you are. Understanding this is how you will find the strength to move forward. You will be carrying your dad within you, forever." Jennifer wiped away her tears, a hint of stability replacing the raw grief in her eyes. "Thank you," she said to Violet, her voice thick with emotion. "And please, call me Jen. That's what everyone close to me calls me." A genuine smile touched Violet's lips. "It would be my honor, Jen." A newfound sense of kinship was blooming between them. A tear escaped Lily's eye, tracing a glistening path down her cheek. Lily, unable to contain herself any longer, sprang to her feet. Her voice, thick with barely suppressed tears, cutting through the tender moment between Violet and Jennifer, Lily said, I want Grandpa's last hug too. Looking over at her father with a frown, "That's why I came," she explained. Her young sweet voice desperate to not miss out. "I'm his family too, and I need his hug, really bad." Violet looked over at Davy, with her eyes asking if it was okay, silently, seeking his permission. A subtle nod from him was all she needed. Turning back to Lily, Violet offered a gentle smile. "Come sit here next to me, sweetheart," she said, patting the empty space beside her. Lily wasted no time scooting in, her lower lip quivering slightly. Violet took Lily's hand, her touch warm and comforting. Violet's eyes softened as they met Lily's. She understood that grief was universal, and how it could touch hearts, regardless of age or experience. Violet softly asked, "Is this the first time someone you love dearly has passed away?" For a fleeting moment, Lily's eyes darted towards her father, before returning to Violet. "Yes," she whispered, with another tear tracing a path down her cheek. The memories of Violet, losing her own father when she was a young teenager, flashed in her mind, stirring up a new wave of emotions that threatened to engulf her. Determined to hold her emotions in check, Violet continued, saying, "Lily, I'm certain your grandfather loved you very much." She assured her with her voice steady, despite her own turmoil within. "Your grandfather must be incredibly proud of you, and I have no doubt his last hug was meant for you as well." A new flood of tears welled up in Lily's eyes, as she nodded vigorously. With her voice half crying, she said, "I know he would hug me if he could. He hugged me every time he saw me." Without another word, Violet pulled Lily into a warm embrace. As they held each other, Violet murmured those powerful magical words, "Be the max, Lily." The warmth of the embrace seemed to soothe Lily's aching heart, yet tears continued to stream down her cheeks. "Thank you, Poppy," she cried out. "Thank you for all the fun times. You're the greatest grandpa anyone could ever ask for." As Violet listened to Lily's heartfelt words, a wave of anger washed over her. How could anyone purposely hurt this child, to take the life of her grandfather, her Poppy? Lily was evidence that the bomber had injured a lot of children by taking and hurting the people they loved. He had unleashed a ripple effect of pain and sadness, an attack on children that spread far beyond the immediate blast. As their embrace loosened, Violet gently placed her hands on Lily's shoulders and looked her in the eye. "Lily, your grandpa isn't truly gone," she said softly. Glancing over towards Davy and Jennifer, silently acknowledging their shared grief, Violet was talking to all of them. "He still lives on within you, just like within everyone else in your family. He's a part of who you are, and as you make your way through life, being the Max, he'll be on the journey with you, every step of the way." Lily sniffled, wiping her tears with the back of her hand. She said, "Thank you." Her grief hadn't vanished, but Violet's words offered a glimmer of hope, a reminder that the love she shared with her grandpa would forever be a part of her. Violet rose, then gravitated towards the edge of the pavilion, her gaze drawn to Julie's solitary figure on a faraway bench. Julie had maintained a curious distance since leaving the gathering, her steps tracing a silent path around the courtyard's perimeter, lingering over plants and ornaments, as if seeking solace in their quiet beauty. "I should say goodbye to your mom before I leave," Violet announced, turning to address Davy and Jennifer. With a skeptical look, Davy replied, "I don't know, Violet. She has been completely withdrawn. Maybe she's not quite ready for, well, for Dad's hug tonight." Violet considered this, then offered, "Not likely. But I'd still like to say my farewells. Would it be all right if I spoke with her privately for a moment?" Violet's actions so far had been measured and insightful, and Davy's trust in her was evident. He looked over at Jennifer, seeking her input, saying, "I think it would be okay for Violet to talk with Mom alone. Are you okay with that, Jen?" Jennifer nodded with a concerned look on her face. "Sure, I trust her." Davy looked over to Violet. "Go ahead, we'll wait here." Violet walked over towards Julie, and as she approached, she was able to sense Julie's tension and nervousness building, especially when she came close. Reaching the bench, Violet sat down beside Julie, both women gazing out at the star-strewn expanse above. "Your church has a lovely courtyard," Violet began, her voice gentle. Then she added, "especially tonight, with the stars so bright." Julie offered a hesitant and short reply, "Yes, it is." Violet kept her gaze fixed on the glittering expanse above. With her voice low and measured, she continued. I can only imagine the life you've built with Dave over the decades. A lifetime of shared experiences, a family raised together, and now, the joy of grandchildren. Julie remained silent, her body a statue of grief, but Violet sensed a hint of acknowledgement in her manner. Then suddenly, something triggered within Julie, like the floodgates just opened. With tears in her eyes and half crying, she opened up to Violet. I don't want anyone telling me that they are sorry for me. I don't want their pity, or trays of food brought to my house. I don't want sympathy cards, or people calling me on the phone making me talk and relive it all. She turned to Violet, and said, or last hugs. I know they're meant well, all these gestures, and I try to be polite. But for me, they're more like a slap in my face, and they hurt. To me, they are all symbols of no Dave, and they keep hitting me, over and over. Violet kept her stare into the courtyard and just listened. Hinting at a reluctance to accept her loss, Julie continued, All I want is my Dave back. I keep hoping he'll surprise me and come back to me, and that somehow, everybody has it all wrong. I even keep seeing him out of the corner of my eye, or hear him speaking, only to realize it's somebody else, or nothing at all. Julie finally went silent, sadly looking down, exhausted from her gush of emotion. Violet silently absorbed Julie's outburst, her gaze fixed on the twinkling expanse above. After a thoughtful pause, Violet finally replied with a soft, yet firm voice. It's only been 3 days. This is all so sudden, and it's still so very new, it's going to take time to adjust. Violet gestured with her hand towards the pavilion, saying, Those people over there are your family. They love you, and they are here for you. Together, as a family, you can sort through all this. They may not have said it, but they need your help too. They need your support, right now. They are all hurting a lot more than you probably know. Violet turned her head and looked Julie in the eye, saying, Like it or not, you're the leader of this family now, the mama bear who holds this family together and protects it. Somehow, you need to find the strength to lead your family, to guide them through all of this. Julie looked across at the pavilion, and she could see the faces of Davy, Jennifer, and Lily looking back, watching with their faces filled with worry, and with a silent plea. What she saw were her babies. No matter how big they had become, they were still her babies. Julie looked over at Violet with tears rolling down her cheeks, nodding with agreement she said, I've got to go to my family. Her reaction to Violet's words was instinctive. Violet offered a warm smile. I thought so, she said. Go on. I'll see myself out. Julie rose to her feet, and briskly walked with newfound purpose towards the pavilion. As if drawn by an invisible force, her family rushed to meet her. They collided in a tearful embrace, their cries echoing through the courtyard. It was an unfiltered, heartbreaking display of grief, but also, a symbol of a new beginning, a family united in their sorrow, ready to face the future together. Only after a long embrace, did they begin to separate. Davy's gaze swept across the courtyard, searching. He noticed the empty space where Violet had been minutes ago. With a silent farewell, she had vanished into the night, leaving behind a trail of comfort and a glimmer of hope for Julie and her family. In less than an hour, Violet finally reached her apartment, the exhaustion of the day settling in, as the door once again clicked shut behind her. She paused by the door in the dimly lit living room, breathing a deep sigh of relief. Before allowing herself to succumb to her fatigue, she made her way to the framed wedding photograph hanging on the wall, and John's smiling face. John, she began, thanks for being my strength, for inspiring me to fulfill the promise I made to Dave. Taking a deep breath, she reached for the shelf below the picture where John's folded flag lay. Gently, she picked up the titanium necklace she had gifted him on their wedding day. The Star of David pendant, catching the soft light filtering through the window. I think you'd be proud of me, Violet whispered. While tracing the intricate star design with her fingertip, she added, It seemed like such an impossible task just days ago, but somehow, it's working out. She paused for a moment, then said with a smile and satisfied expression, I have only one more person that I need to give Dave's last hug to, his wife Julie. Dave's whole family are very nice people. You would have enjoyed being friends with them. After imagining John shaking hands with Davy, she continued, saying, "It's interesting how each family member is dealing with Dave's death differently." Giving it some thought, she took a moment to assess how she had dealt, and is still dealing with, John's death. About to finalize her conversation with John, Violet placed John's necklace on over her head. Just feeling its weight against her was comforting. Lovingly, she gently kissed the pendant, then tucked it inside her shirt. Violet whispered, "I miss you, John, more than words can say." With a final lingering glance at her late husband's photo, Violet turned away, her exhaustion settling in. With a grateful sigh, Violet crawled into bed. The soft sheets were a welcoming embrace. Tomorrow would bring another early start, another journey alongside Sam, and this time to Houston. Little did she know, their paths might possibly collide again with Carlos Mendoza and his sinister plans. What seemed like a getting away from it all assignment in Houston may likely be putting them directly in harm's way. But for tonight, Violet allowed her much-deserved rest and her dreams to claim her.